This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina's been in the midst of a prison staffing crisis for years. Work shortages contributed to fatal attacks on four employees at Pascatank Correctional Institution in 2017. And now three minimum security correctional facilities in the state will close temporarily because of system-wide employee shortages. The workers will be moved to support staffing at other facilities. WUNC Capital Bureau Chief Jeff DeBeery has been following the story and joins me now. Jeff, welcome.
Good to be here, Frank.
I want to talk about the prisons and this temporary shutdown of three prisons. But before we get to that, there is news of a coming lawsuit to have the congressional district for the state of North Carolina redrawn for the 2020 election. What's going on?
The redistricting is dizzying at this point, Frank. Yeah, this is new. I've had several conversations this morning, and a lawsuit is imminent. That's according to a Democratic operative. Attorneys are finalizing the process of getting plaintiffs, one from each of the 13 congressional districts. This is a lawsuit that's going to be funded by the National Democratic Redistricting Committee that I think recently is known really as Eric Holder's group. This is a group that President Obama and former Attorney General Holder started a couple of years ago. And they're going to sue on the basis of North Carolina's congressional maps being extreme partisan gerrymanders. Listeners will remember we just kind of lived through this. There was a state court that ruled this North Carolina's legislative districts were extreme partisan gerrymanders. So this is going to be a challenge that is going to challenge the 13 U.S. House districts. We will have more on this in the coming hours and days.
And yeah, just to sort of relieve some of the confusion,
sure.
Some of those congressional districts had been found to be illegally gerrymandered, racially gerrymandered, and there's a remedy on the way. And then, of course, the remedy has been ordered for the legislative districts. So we can expect new districts
right. For
legislative districts by 2020. But now we're talking about a suit, all 13 congressional districts, and to have them changed by 2020. So those are separate set of districts and a separate set of lines in redistricting, right?
That is correct. So the 170 legislative seats, court struck them down on a partisan basis earlier this summer or in the summer. They redrew them in short order earlier this month. So that's still going through the final legal process of establishing the legislative, state House, state Senate districts. Then, born out of really the three-judge ruling, the order that came this summer, is going to be this new challenge. And the attorneys who are now challenging the U.S. House maps say that the ruling from the three judges earlier this summer in the state case, pertinent pursuant to the state maps, gives them ground, their perspective, on challenging these U.S. House seats. So, yes, a lot of moving parts, and probably worth reminding folks that we're just a little bit more than 2 months away from the filing season for candidates for the 2020 election. And one other note from me is that when we had that ruling from the three state judges in the summer, they did reserve the right to push back a primary if necessary. So that is something that is in the realm of possibilities as we barrel toward 2020.
I guess one more thing to point out here is that
it will be
resolved in the state courts because this will not
That's right.
To federal courts because of the U.S. or not to the U.S. Supreme Court because the U.S. Supreme Court said they're not hearing any more of these cases.
Right. No, but I think you're correct in presuming there that this is not going to. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in June that the federal courts do not have justiciability on this issue. So we are not expecting there to be any partisan gerrymandering challenges heard in any federal court for years to come.
All right. Let's talk about now prisons in the state of North Carolina, a crisis.
Sure.
Three prisons are going to be closed because of a staffing crisis. Tell us what's happening. First of all, let's talk about the minimum facility prisons and the ones that are going to be closed. Where are they?
That's right. So there are three correctional institutes that are soon going to just shut down. They're going to go through this process of moving the inmates to other facilities. The three are in Hoke County, Northampton County, and Terrell County. These are all in eastern North Carolina. They have a high rate of vacancy as we think about correctional officers, but not necessarily disproportionate to the rest of the state. North Carolina has an issue with vacancies when it comes to correctional officers. So the main reason for this is that they're trying to consolidate inmates in prisons, and they can redirect staff to they can have more staff on hand at various correctional institutes so that it's safer for the staff and the inmates and just a better overall setup.
How bad is the shortage right now?
Statewide, it's 21% statewide. One of these facilities has a vacancy rate of 26%. And you talk to people who are involved in this process, and it's a real issue. I mean, it's a safety concern. You have people, sometimes you have understaffed facilities. Sometimes you have people doing jobs that they're not trained or fully equipped to do. And sometimes you have people who are working back-to-backs, and you have people who are tired doing something that is inherently far more dangerous than the jobs that most of us do.
Been going on for quite a while. The correctional department has been trying to address this. What are some of the underlying reasons?
Payment is a major one, right? And this is something, this is not new. This is something we've heard about here in the legislature for a number of years. Governor Cooper has talked about it. Prior to that, Governor McCrory has talked about this issue. And recently, you know, we have this whole issue with the state budget, but you know, on a parallel track, there have been mini budgets that have moved forward. And one of those dealt with the Department of Public Safety. And what lawmakers are trying to do is incentivize folks to work, to either stay at or accept a job at these correctional facilities that have very high rates of vacancy. So they approved a raise of, I believe it's 5% over 2 years, and also these pretty significant bonuses. I believe it's a bonus, or it is a bonus, of $7,500 in each of the next 2 years for corrections officers who are working at these high vacancy locations.
Now, just a footnote, we know that the budget is held up by the veto and hasn't been overridden yet. Does this, these pay raises, are they exempt? Did they get through somehow?
Or they did. There's the big budget that's kind of lingering, and then there have been five mini budgets that have moved through both chambers and have been signed by the governor. So that these raises are being implemented. There are other areas of state government that have seen improvements or pay raises authorized, and this is one of them.
All right. And these three facilities that are going to be temporarily closed, any idea how long?
It will be at least 6 months. I spoke with somebody from the Department of Public Safety yesterday who said literally half a dozen times, this is not a permanent closure. These are temporary closures, and this is something that they will review in 6 months. But in the name of safety and in the name of trying to fill some of these vacancies for now, they're going to move. It's between 1,000 and 2,000 inmates from these three facilities to other prisons in the state, and then they'll reassess in spring of 2020.
Jeff DeBerry, WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
North Carolina, not the only state facing problems recruiting and maintaining staff. It's a nationwide problem. Joseph Neff is with the Marshall Project, a staff writer with the Marshall Project, and has been writing about this. Joe, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Give us a picture of the staffing crisis nationally. We're not alone in this, are we?
Oh, it's from coast to coast. You have in Kansas, the governor in February declared an emergency and put staff at one prison on mandatory overtime, 12 hours a day. They're only going to lift that next month. Wisconsin, Delaware, Maryland, Nebraska, Mississippi, you name it, prison systems have a hard time keeping the required number of staff.
Well, you named Mississippi, and you've done some reporting on an extraordinary step taken in that state. Tell us that story.
Well, there's a prison in the southwest corner in Wilkinson County run by a private company, MTC, out of Utah, and they have a really hard time keeping employees. The vacancy rate is around 26%. The turnover is in the last year, 2018, was 89%. So not only do you have a lot of vacancies, but how can you run a facility that requires trained employees when you lose 89% of your employees? And so the security conditions at this place are pretty outrageous. There's a lot of assaults on staff, a lot of assaults on inmates, and in the murder rate down there for inmates in 2017, three inmates killed, 2018, three inmates killed, and a lot of that was gang-related.
Gangs were, and at a certain point, the warden sat down with the gangs and essentially put them in charge. Am I right?
Well, the warden sits down with the two main prison gangs there and talks with them and asks them, hey, can you please keep the violence down? So in an internal company audit, and this is not an advocate or a journalist asserting this, but in the company's own words, they criticize themselves for handing control of the prison over to the gangs.
I wonder, Joe,
we talked about, we don't
have too much time left here, maybe about 30 seconds or so. We talked about, raising pay, but it seems like an overall reform of the system, the penal system itself is what's in order here. I wonder if your reporting indicates that.
Well, I think that, like Jeff said, salaries are really important. In states where you have good benefits and good salary for a difficult and often unpleasant job, there's not a lot of problems with vacancies. But in states where you're maybe starting off at $24,000, $26,000, $30,000 a year for an unpleasant job that's not rewarded in society, we don't, in general, don't have a positive impression of correctional officers, unlike police officers. And so there's just so many strikes against the correctional officer out there, starting with low pay.
Joe Neff is a staff writer with the Marshall Project. As always, Joe, thanks so much for your reporting.
Good to be here.
Just ahead, Raleigh Little Theater tells the story of the Gina Six. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us.